This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
When he visited the migrant center, the French president made it absolutely clear that he wanted to see for himself what the conditions in this reception center were like, and he wanted to actually speak to the people, the migrants in the reception center.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Full details on the story coming up.
Also, Raila Odinga, Kenya's opposition leader, says he plans to be inaugurated as president of the country, even though Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in late last year. And Ethiopia's general prosecutor announced today that charges against 528 prisoners detained following last year's uprising will be dropped.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, tensions continue to climb in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions following the arrest of as many as 11 separatist leaders earlier this month in neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the southwestern capital of Bouye.
Panic gripped the residents of several towns in Cameroon's Anglophone southwest Monday as separatist groups vowed to keep up the pressure for the release of their leaders detained in Nigeria. The southwest capital was abuzz with reports that unidentified armed men were attacking schools and had reportedly kidnapped two traders. The confusion spread to Moya, Moyuka, Kumba, and other towns in the southwest. VOA could find no eyewitnesses to any alleged violence. No security officials have confirmed the reports of attacks, but panic ensued nonetheless.
It was a terrible day. Everybody was running to every direction. I first of all locked myself in my shop, but the shouting and running made me to change my mind. I trekked through the bush to my house.
VOA met textile trader Ann Manka early Tuesday at the main market in Boya. The city was quiet, but she and several other traders had decided to keep their shop closed. Boya Mayor Ekema Patrick blames rumors for the panic.
We have been moving around to assure the parents that life has regained its normalcy within the municipality.
At the government bilingual grammar school Moliko in Boya, school teacher Emmanuel Amin said barely 20% of his students had returned to class Tuesday.
Today, as we speak, we have 71 students. All our teachers are in place. Maybe we have more students coming.
Southwest Regional Governor Bernard Okalia Bilai says secessionist groups are trying to manipulate the public.
We should remain vigilant. Parents should continue to protect their children and allow them to go to schools. The children have already suffered last year. It should not happen again this year. Security measures have been put in place to protect the entire population and all the activities.
The Anglophone crisis began in November 2016 when teachers and lawyers in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions went on strike. The strike devolved into violent unrest and stalemate, shuttering schools for a year. Meanwhile, separatist groups emerged calling for the two Anglophone regions to break away. In October, the secessionist groups declared a new state they call Ambazonia. The declaration sparked deadly unrest, and there have since been several clashes in Cameroon between suspected separatists and the military. The so-called president of Ambazonia and at least eight other people were arrested January 5 in Nigeria. The separatists have declared a curfew 3 days a week for residents of the southwest and northwest until their leaders are freed. In a news release emailed to news agencies Tuesday, a group identifying itself as the interim government of Ambazonia said Nigerian authorities are keeping 11 of their leaders detained incommunicado without access to lawyers or relatives. Amnesty International has expressed concern the detainees could face torture and unfair trials if extradited from Nigeria. the government of Cameroon has declined to comment on the arrest. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Boya, Southwestern Cameroon.
Burundi's government recently proposed constitutional changes that would, among other things, allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to stay in office beyond 2020. Civil society groups say the government is arresting opponents of those changes in advance of an upcoming referendum. Mohamed Yusuf and Eloge Kanizi report from Nairobi.
Officially, Burundi's government has banned anyone from campaigning for or against the proposed changes to the constitution. But civil society groups accuse the government of targeting those suspected to urging voters to reject the changes. The head of Burundi's Forum for Strengthening the Civil Society, Vital Nshirimana, says people cannot make free choices.
Yeah, so far there is dozens of people, about 60 people were arrested in many sides of the country. And this is one of the signs showing that the referendum should not be fair, since those campaigning against the no are arrested, while those campaigning for the yes are not arrested.
The government says the changes are aimed at strengthening and advancing the country's laws after more than 2 years of political violence. The violence was triggered in April 2015 when President Nkurunziza announced he will run for a controversial third term. Opponents said he was violating constitutional term limits and the peace deal that ended Burundi's civil war. Now, critics believe Nkurunziza is manoeuvring to stay in power beyond the end of his current term in 2020. Hamisi Sultan represents opposition party FNL, which is against the constitutional change. He was arrested on January 2nd. It is the prosecutor of Ruyigi province who issued an arrest warrant against me. I was questioned and I was accused of organizing and leading a group meeting aimed at sanitizing people to vote against the proposed constitutional change. We were with friends having fun and some of them were arrested too. We were accused of participating in an illegal meeting aimed at opposing the draft constitution. Sultan was released after 3 days without charge. The president deputy spokesman Alain Domide says the government is educating its people on the proposed changes, but no one is allowed to advance for passing or rejecting them.
The government is explaining to the electorate the content of the constitution. I mean, some articles that are likely to change, etc. There is no campaign to vote yes or no. The campaign has not yet started. So when you teach people to vote no and the campaign has not started, you understand that you're running against the law.
Burundians will vote on the proposed changes in May. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Raila Odinga, Kenya's opposition leader, says he plans to be inaugurated as president of the country, even though Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in late last year. Odinga, head of the National Super Alliance, today sat down with Kennedy Wandera, a VOA Swahili service. Together, they discussed his insistence that he is the true president of the election. Among other things, he says his party has seen figures from Kenya's August election that prove he won and rejects the outcome of the October rerun. He says that Kenya is in a crisis.
Crisis is as a result of the bungled elections. And it's not just presidential elections. It cuts across all the levels where the elections were held. That's the reason why you have unprecedented high number of petitions in the courts this time around.
He dismisses the claims by some political opponents that his plan for an inauguration is just a lever to get concessions from the government.
So we're not using the swearing-in as a basis of negotiating with Uhuru Kenyatta. You have said, in fact, we don't want any stake in Uhuru Kenyatta's government. We want to be the ones who are in government.
However, Odinga says he is ready to talk with Uhuru and has a five-point agenda for any talks.
And that's why I'm very confident that the people of this country have said they want electoral justice. They want the judiciary to be independent. They want a police force to be tamed. not thugs or rogues in uniform. They want the constitution to be restructured and strengthened. They want the executive to be restructured so that it is responsive to the needs of our people.
But he is steadfast that he won't talk about Kenyatta's development agenda. His five items, Odinga says, are critical to governance, and in his words, they cannot be washed away.
And you have asked Jubilee if they have another item or agenda they want to put on the table. They are free to do so. We are ready to discuss. But our agenda for swearing in is not negotiable. You say that if we cannot talk by 30th of October, of January, we are going to be sworn in. And we will then release our program thereafter.
That was Raila Odinga, leader of Kenya's NASA political party, speaking from VOA Swahili service today in Nairobi.
Ethiopia's general prosecutor announced today that charges against 528 prisoners detained following last year's uprising will be dropped. At a news conference today, Getachew Ombaye said the decision to free the prisoners, both at federal and local levels, follows a recent resolution by the executive committee of the ruling party, the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, to form a justice affairs task force. He says 115 federal prisoners will be released Wednesday. Getachew added that charges will be dropped for 361 prisoners in the district of Dilla and 52 suspects in the district of Konso, both in the southern regional state. Only suspects who were not accused of killings or causing physical injuries will be released. Others eligible for release include those who were not directly involved in protests or who did not spearhead attacks on economic institutions and infrastructure. Human rights groups estimate 4,000 political prisoners are behind bars in Ethiopia.
French President Emmanuel Macron is in northern France today looking at facilities for migrants. He's also speaking to business leaders and security officials about what can be done to improve the handling of migrants and refugees. He also visited a reception center and spoke individually with migrants, including a young man from Sudan. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with me about the president's visit and about the speech he gave to the people of France after his visit to the migrant center.
When he visited the migrant center, the French president made it absolutely clear that he wanted to see for himself what the conditions in this reception center were like, and he wanted to actually speak to the people, the migrants in the reception center. And we did get a glimpse of him talking to a young man from the Sudan who had arrived in France in mid-2017. Now, the president spoke to him and said to him, "How did you get here?" And he explained that he'd left his home country in 2015. He'd gone to Libya, he'd crossed the Mediterranean by boat. So there we saw very much that Emmanuel Macron wanted to know more about the personal stories of these migrants who have come to France. And he also spoke a lot, at length actually, to some of the helpers, particularly the volunteers in these centres, what services they're providing, such as help with the paperwork, help learning French. And then he also spoke to the local officials at the reception centre to say, what more can the government actually do to make sure that these reception centres are operating efficiently?
Also, after he left this reception centre, he has given a speech, and actually as we are doing this interview right now, he is still speaking. So what is he saying today?
The key points that he's saying today is that there are still at least 6,000 unaccompanied minors in the northern France area that are still in need of a place of refuge, and that he means that they have a right to go to the United Kingdom, and he wants the United Kingdom to speed up the process of accepting these unaccompanied minors. He has also said that France needs itself to speed up the processing of not just unaccompanied minors, but all refugees and migrants who come into the country. So what he's saying is these new laws that he's proposing means there has to be more quickly, dossiers have to be examined, there is going to be a reduction of the length of time in which migrants arriving in France can register for asylum. There is also going to be a reduction in the length of time after an asylum seeker has been refused that you can appeal against this judgment. So that will mean that it will have to go through the courts quicker and that the appeal process will also be quicker. On the other side, he's also said they will lengthen the time which these migrants or asylum seekers can stay in the reception centres. This is a way of stopping them from going and setting up other encampments. Also, he said that the one thing they are going to make sure happens in Calais is that there are no more illegal encampments, that the jungle, that large area, sometimes houses at least 10,000 migrants, they will not allow that to happen again. And in that way, he said, we will keep the number of police and troops on the ground to make sure that doesn't happen. He also said they want to quickly repatriate those whose applications are refused. But he has also said in this keynote speech that France cannot do this on their own. And he specifically said the European Union, the United Nations, and the African Union have to all work together to make sure that this is a problem that they all tackle together. And he specifically said it's going to need all countries from Europe right down to Guinea to work together to make sure that these people don't take these long journeys to Europe that are going to be fruitless, but also to make sure that there is security in their home countries so they don't need to make this journey.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
Past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Fierce fighting between militants and government forces at Libya's only international airport killed 20 people and left more than 60 others wounded. Yesterday's standoff shut down Mitiga Airport in Tripoli for most of the day. It is unclear when flights can fully resume. Libya's internationally recognized government says armed militants attacked the airport, where more than 2,500 people are jailed for various crimes. The government said militants were attempting to free terrorists belonging to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda organizations and also other groups.
On January 14, 2011, Tunisia's President Zine El Abidine Ben Ali fled his country after a democratic uprising ended his years in power. Today, the country is still facing corruption and other challenges. Mangi Douadi is a senior program officer for Tunisia and North Africa at the Washington-based Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy. He explained to VOA's Mohamed El-Shanawi the changes that followed Ben Ali's departure.
Since that departure of Ben Ali in 2011, we have seen drastic changes, fundamental changes in Tunisia, starting from the political system that became a share between a parliamentary system and a presidential system. We have a new constitution that governs. It's one of the most progressive constitutions in the Arab world. We have a new political field, if you will. Many political parties have merged. Some of them have existed before, but they were not allowed to function. But now some of them are even in governing Tunisia for the last 6 or 7 years. So there is fundamental changes in the political system. There has been free and fair elections that were done in Tunisia. There was a peaceful transfer of power that we have seen in 2014. So on this front, Tunisians have made great strides. However, there's still many challenges that are facing Tunisia, starting with the security issues, especially alongside the border with Libya, with the civil war in Libya and the unrests. Also in the economic front, Tunisians up until today is struggling with a lot of unrest, many different regions, because of the unsuccessful governments that succeeded or seceded after the elections 2011 and after 2014. The Tunisians are still not satisfied with the solutions that these governments have presented so far.
One big challenge is corruption. How did Ben Ali facilitate corruption and what's needed to counter it?
During the Ben Ali era, Ben Ali, what he has done, he has moved Tunisia from being governed by a single party that was under during the Bourguiba era to a country that is governed by his family and his wife's family. And it became almost a system that is controlled by mafia. During the Ben Ali era, especially the last 10 years of his reign, there was nothing that you could do in Tunisia in terms of business transactions that doesn't have to go through one of his family and his cronies. Basically benefited solely from these transactions. Ben Ali was also, his system was very smart into marketing Tunisia outside as a successful model. But we know now, after looking back at those records, that there was a lot of facade of an economic successful story of Tunisia. But underneath that, there was rotten, there was corruption, there was cronyism, there was a family that basically benefited from the system. And so after the revolution, these new governments, whether it's the Troika government, 2011, after the 2011 elections, or the Nida and Nahda governments that proceeded after 2014, have inherited basically a failed system. Corruption is rampant in Tunisia. We know that the last government now of Youssef El-Shehad have declared war on corruption. Whether they are succeeding or not is to be seen.
Although Ben Ali took refuge in Saudi Arabia, his close associates are participating in ruling post-revolution Tunisia. What does that mean?
Well, in a sense, Tunisians are relieved that Ben Ali left Tunisia within 3 weeks only after they started revolting in 2010-2011. But at the same time, let's be frank, Saudi Arabia and some of its allies are not too thrilled about a democratic experiment in the region. Some of them want to see that democratic transition fail. There are some forces with minimal support. They're trying to suggest, probably indirectly, to the Tunisian people that things were under Ben Ali are much better than what they are now. I don't think the Tunisian people are buying that at all. And I think, if anything, the Tunisians insist that the successful political steps that they took after the revolution, they're not willing to go back on those.
That was Mangi Douadi, a senior program officer for Tunisia and North Africa at the Washington-based Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy. He was speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on The Voice of America.